This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Pete Zimmerman produces the show. I'm John Williams. Elise Glink always starts us off on Mondays. So let's do it again. Hi, Elise.
Hi, John.
Let's get cracking here now. The markets are off a tiny bit, but maybe more importantly, consumer sentiment is off considerably, huh?
Yeah, it's interesting. According to the University of Michigan's Index of Consumer Sentiment, it fell 11 points, about 13.5% from July. That's a stunning drop. And you have to just imagine that people are now starting to really worry about the Delta variant.
Is that it? So how does that translate into consumer sentiment?
Well, it's interesting. So it is the Consumer Sentiment Index. It's down to 70. And just to give you some comparison, this is now a number that's below where it was in April of 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic when we were all so freaked out. So apparently people are freaked. What concerns, and I'm surprised that the markets haven't reacted, they started to react pretty strongly to a number of things in the news this morning. They've bounced back. They're about even now with where they were, which is at an all-time high as of Friday. But what's interesting is that when consumer sentiment goes down, you typically see a reduction in the number of people looking to buy big ticket items like houses and cars. You also see some hesitation for investing in the markets. And so typically you do see the stock market react, but it hasn't yet.
So much money on the sidelines, though, you'd think at some point that dam's going to burst.
Well, it'll be interesting. So the Federal Reserve is now talking about pulling back or tapering its bond purchases. And, you know, what it's been doing for 12 years now, of course, is supporting the stock market and companies everywhere by buying bonds and keeping those prices propped up. So they want to make sure there's plenty of money in the economy to lend people, and there is now. So they're talking about reducing their purchases.
I wonder what on a sort of individual consumer level what this means. Do people have money in bank accounts and they're saying, I'm going to wait and buy a car later this year when the Delta variant is under control? I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like, but that seems to be kind of a wonky way for people to make decisions, you know?
Well, I don't think that people are sort of thinking about Delta when it comes to a car. What they think about with their car is, oh my gosh, I had a crash or it stopped working and I need a new one. But we did see people put those purchases on hold. We also saw last year that it's interesting, a fair number of people lease cars in the United States. And typically those leases come up in the springtime, March, April, May. And last year, that was right at the beginning of COVID. And because of the pandemic, car companies that normally lease the cars said, don't bring them back. We don't want them. We're just extending everything. Just keep paying us for another 3 months and we'll figure it out. They didn't want to, nobody knew if those cars would be infected, right? And or they would transfer that infection. Nobody wanted to touch those cars. And so what it did is it may have permanently shifted the timeline of when people lease cars and buy cars in this country. And what we're seeing now is we're going into the fall that those leases are coming up. People are looking for new cars and we don't have enough cars. And so prices are going up there. It's just been interesting to watch how everything has shifted.
I think we've all heard stories of somebody selling their car, their used car, for more than they paid for it, you know, three,
yeah,
8 years ago, depending on the car and the mileage. But it's amazing how strong used car prices are. And I guess that's what's happened with the leased vehicles. You say, okay, now the lease really is up and I don't want this, but there's not another new car out there to lease, right?
Yeah, the leases that are coming back in are being resold as used cars,
yeah,
not being released. And those prices are propped up, and those look pretty good for people. They tend to, those cars are having a little bit more mileage on them, of course, because they had an extra 3 months in the lease. But we are seeing, it's a bit of a problem. If you drive around, and I've been driving a bit around Chicago the last, I don't know, 10 days or so, you notice that car lots are pretty empty. There just aren't a lot of cars, not a lot of inventory. Whether that's a new car lot or a used car lot, you're really just not seeing the number of cars packed that you would normally see this time of year. Because right now we're gearing up for the end of the season for, let's see, we're 2021. So this would be the 2022 models are about to come onto the car lots. But again, everything is really delayed from last year. We haven't quite caught up.
Yeah, I've been talking to a car dealer, and he's been telling me stories about not only his inventory, but other car dealers. And this is not an uncommon scenario. A dealer who would normally have 200 new vehicles on the lot has 20 new vehicles on the lot. Yeah. When you drive by, you go, wait, look at all those cars. Those are certified pre-owns. Those are used vehicles, and they shine them up and they put them out there. They'll sell them. But if you want new cars and trucks, the inventory is just down crazy right now.
It is. And it's also a problem for people who are trying to get cars fixed. So just anecdotally, one of our cars was parked on a random street near downtown Chicago, and it had the catalytic converter stolen. We were one of those people. And the car has been sitting at the dealer now for the last, I don't know, week or two, waiting for them to even, number one, get to it to look at it, because there's so many people who now have issues with cars and there aren't enough people fixing the cars, but they're also short on parts. So we're still having a supply problem of getting certain kinds of parts in from yeah. different places around the world and even the U.S., and that's causing backups there.
I'm sorry to hear all of that. We'll pause here. Just one other note about that. I was reading this weekend that this may be a model that car dealers don't mind going down the road. That is, you want to buy a new car, great. Let's order it. It'll be made and then shipped, and we'll sell it to you at a price that we've all agreed upon. But the carrying costs for dealers are down considerably right now because they don't have to buy all those cars that are sitting on their lots. I don't think they're making as much money right now, but they might... They might find a happy medium here where they don't have to carry as many cars. We'll still buy them, but we're going to have to be patient about getting them.
Yeah.
Let's pause here. So 1216 on WGN. I want to ask you about what's going on in China, what's going on in Kabul, and what's going on elsewhere in the markets. We're visiting with Elise Glink on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's talk a little bit about the real estate market, about mortgages and applications. What's going on there?
Well, it's interesting, John. Mortgage rates have been rising, falling, rising, falling, and but they're mostly staying in a pretty good set. But what we were talking about earlier about how consumer sentiment seems to be down, it looks like that is going to affect mortgage interest rates as well. Investors are seeing this sharp decline as a sign that maybe Delta could cause some economic issues, or at least more than we're previously, you know, we were thinking about. And so when that happens, the bond market typically goes into overdrive and mortgage rates come down. That's good for anybody who's trying to buy a house. But we're already seeing mortgage interest rates at around the 3% or even 2.75% level, which is, you know, near historic growth. So it'll be interesting to see how that changes. In the meantime, what we have seen, though, is that applications for home purchase loans increased the first week in August, almost up 2%. Applications for FHA loans were almost double that, up 3.3% for the week. And that's, of course, a good option for first-time home buyers because it allows you to borrow so much more money and still get that low interest rate.
Mm-hmm. What's your read on that? I thought that the market had topped out. You're telling me that they're up again, both traditional and FHA loans here, right?
Yeah, we are seeing a slowdown. So, for example, if you look at, you may see a few more homes for sale signs, right? We seem to have hit the summer pause. It's now mid-August. We're seeing the pause that we normally would have seen in July and June as people kind of regroup and then they get ready to put their houses on the market for the fall. So we would normally have expected a slowdown June, July, August. We're seeing it now, may continue into the beginning of September. But if interest rates continue at this level, I think we will see a very strong autumn and a lot of people looking to buy their first house.
Do you have much to say about Kabul and China? Are you looking at the international scene and how that's affecting us?
What I'm seeing there is, you know, it's not a direct effect today. There's a whole part of the economy that's built on supporting our, I don't know what to say, wars abroad. And there's a significant part of that, you know, if you cancel a war or you pull out of a country, that it could be affected. The markets seem focused a little bit more on Delta variant today, however, and what's going on with China. There was also a report, I just want to raise this. T-Mobile has over 100 million customers, and they came out a couple of, within the last hour, with a report that possibly all 100 plus million customers may have had their data hacked. What's interesting about this, we've seen a lot of big hacks before, but it isn't just names, addresses, and phone numbers, but also it could be driver's license and social security numbers, and even the digital code for people who use their thumbprints to get into their phones. It could be that that was hacked as well. And so there'll be more news coming out about this, but if you're one of the 100 plus million T-Mobile customers, you're going to want to pay attention to this. And if there's an offer for free credit monitoring, you're going to want to take that offer, you're going to want to sign up, and you're going to want to freeze your credit until they figure out exactly what this hack is and how big it is.
Thinking of the Target hack that took place years ago, and you say, okay, well, I haven't seen any suspicious activity on my account. Sometimes this stuff lays dormant, this information, or just the sale and use of it is such a protracted process that you might not, you may have been hacked, and you won't know that but for a year or more down the road, right?
Yeah, you really have to stay vigilant on this. I can't stress this importantly enough. As we move and continue to move into a digital economy where you're downloading your data from bank accounts and credit card accounts and everything into an online platform, you have these digital wallets. Google has it, you know, Credit Karma has it, you know, Equifax and Experian. There's all kinds of places where you can do this. You have to get really vigilant about security. And one of the ways that you can do that is to go to each of the three credit reporting bureaus, sign up for a free account, and then literally freeze your credit on each of their accounts. And those websites, by freezing it, it means that nobody can apply for credit cards or other forms of credit in your name. It's just really important to stay on top of that.
This isn't the same, but it reminds me of what Ian Schur from CNET said to us on the morning show today, and that is, if you don't have one of those wallets where you keep all of your passwords and you only have to remember the one password that gets you into the wallet and then everything is stored securely there, you should get one of those. And he liked LastPass, L-A-S-T, LastPass is one of those. There's a bunch of them, he said, but do that and then you won't have to worry about remembering them all or making everything have the same password, which is what we all do.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, if you use Chrome as your browser, Google's got an excellent password keeper. You can keep it there. They store very long and complicated passwords with lots of numbers and whatever. But if you think about passwords, you know, you might be able to get away with just an 8-digit number, but really, you're much better off with a strong password that's at least 12 characters long, has upper and lower cases, has numbers, has some sort of, you know, an exclamation mark or a dollar sign or some other sort of special character, something that makes it very difficult or much more difficult to hack.
And then make sure you write them down in a notebook that says our passwords and keep it on top of your TV set so
yes,
that they will be safely stored there. Elise Glink, thinklink.com. Okay, Elise, nice to talk to you.
Always a pleasure.
Don't do that last thing. And Jim Dahlke joins us on Mondays frequently, the senior editor at Chicago Inno. Hey, welcome back, Jim. I hope you're well.
Hey, John. Yes, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this Chicago HR startup called Anthill. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Anthill, a new startup just founded in 2020, just last week raised $3 million in new funding. And they're a really interesting business. HR software might not sound super fascinating, but actually what they do is pretty unique. So what they've created is what they call talent mapping software that essentially gives companies data about their employees, including their skills and interests and career development goals. Basically, what companies can do with that data is kind of help train and reskill and promote their best workers. And what Anthill does is sort of focuses on the quote-unquote deskless workforce. So, you know, think employees in manufacturing, supply chain, retail, other sectors, you know, who aren't of employees who aren't tied to their desk all day long. And so what Ant Hill helps companies do is sort of, you know, promote and find, you know, the best workers within their workforce and help them, you know, continue to climb the ladder. So certainly as, you know, many companies today are sort of struggling on the hiring front, you know, this software company is helping businesses really find those best employees that they have and continue to promote them and train them within their org.
From within, you'd think that if the employees were interested in other positions in the company or aspire to climb the ladder, that they would have made that known to HR. But maybe it's not so so easy to do, huh?
Yeah, you know, some employees do, but, you know, maybe others are a little hesitant to do that. And so that's exactly what Ant Hill does. It sort of creates this, quiz, essentially, that employees can take that kind of allows them to identify what they're interested in. And especially if it turns in terms of, you know, moving into different departments within the company, if they're interested in kind of exploring something else or developing their skill set in a different area. So that's really what Ant Hill is all about.
I'm intrigued by this Clover story that you wrote. It sounds tempting, but it sounds fishy at the same time. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, so Clover, another really interesting new startup founded just in 2019. Essentially, what they do is they give you interest-free loans in exchange for data on your spending habits. So really kind of targeting folks who need a couple $100 in between paychecks. Maybe you've been hit with an unexpected car repair bill or a trip to the hospital, and you know you want to avoid an overdraft fee or going to a high interest credit card to put that expense on. Clover will give you a few $100 interest free in exchange for information on what you're spending. So you give them access to your bank account, and they can kind of see, you know, what your transactions are like in real time, and then essentially are able to serve you targeted ads from the companies they work with. So they work with brands like Wayfair, DoorDash, really to serve you ads based on your spending habits. And, you know, so far users have been okay with giving away their data in exchange for these loans. And in less than 2 years, they've gotten about 1.5 million users on its platform. So really, really fast growing startup. Just last week raised $60 million in new funding to grow its team.
I suppose people surmise that you've already got this information anyway, one way or another. So if I can capitalize on it, I might as well get something in return, huh?
You know, I think what we're finding is that people are willing to fork over their data if what they're getting in return is a value, right? So I think what, you know, consumers are sort of wary of are these, you know, sort of lurking companies that are in the background sort of scraping your data. You know, you're getting served ads. You don't really know where these, you know, data collecting organizations are sort of coming from, right? But what Clover is doing is, you know, allowing you to opt into this, right? You're willfully saying, hey, I'm willing to show you my transaction data in exchange for a loan. So I think if people know what they're getting in return for their data, they're willing to part with it.
So what do you do? Give them access to your checking account ledger, essentially? They'll see what's going and coming, and they go, oh, what do you know? He ate pizza. So now I'm going to get Malnati's ads or something like that?
Yeah, essentially. So what they say is that they don't share or sell your personal identifiable information, but essentially it's an aggregate of all their customers, right? And so they're able to then give you ads based on kind of what your spending habits have been in the past. So obviously very valuable data, you know, on the brand side. So Wayfair sort of knows exactly what type of customer they're eyeing, right? And so, you know, from the user side, hey, you know, you're able to get a few $100 in between paychecks and in an interest-free loan. So really interesting startup out of Chicago, and really kind of exemplifies what we're seeing in the city's tech scene. A lot of really interesting high-growth financial tech startups in Chicago. You know, we've talked about M1 Finance, which raised $150 million for its no-fee investing app earlier this year, up to Tastytrade, which is, you know, online trading firm and financial media network, which was acquired for $1 billion earlier this year, too. So really a lot of interesting financial innovation happening in Chicago right now.
Well, I just would not have seen this niche, right? Like, that's, I guess, the genius of these people. But to me, the lure then of, okay, we'll give you a few $100 to tide you over between paychecks. Maybe that's not the segment of the population you most want to do business with. I mean, just because obviously they're financially strapped, but then all you've got for them is you still got to pay the money back, but you just don't have to pay interest on it. money's pretty cheap these days. I guess a no-interest loan is better than an any-interest loan, but out of that, they're going to make money, huh? That's just intriguing to me.
Yeah, and you know, they also offer some tools on their end, too, that they give to users. So you get some insights on your spending. So the app will also tell you a little bit about what you're spending and, you know, identify ways you can spend less and kind of help you sort of with your habits and kind of your overall financial health, too. So they get you in the door, you know, with the loan, but then they also see themselves as a very useful financial app for consumers.
Still, just think about this. So I said Malnati's Pizza over the course of this conversation. How much you want to bet in the next 24 hours? I'm going to get an ad for Malnati's Pizza. And nobody gave me a zero,
I take that bet.
Zero interest loan. Just a minute left here. Talk to me about this other startup called, is it pronounced Buddy?
That's right. So Buddy, B-U-D-D-H-I, a really fun new startup in Chicago. You know, they have created a better social media platform for cancer patients and survivors, and really kind of focusing on the mental health aspect of things. So obviously, anybody who has gone through cancer knows someone who goes through cancer. You get, the best doctors in the world are working on your care, but often the thing that sort of gets left off the table is, you know, your mental health. And so that's really what Buddy is all about. It's built by entrepreneur Kathleen Brown, who herself is a cancer survivor diagnosed at age 13. And, she really found that, you know, there was not a digital platform for survivors and patients to connect and learn and better cope with their disease. And so what they've done is created this place where folks can do that. It's also got a big library of content, articles and videos where people can go and hear from other people who are battling the same thing and also get information like on dealing with anxiety or, you know, getting back into the dating world after a cancer diagnosis. And really is a really interesting platform here and really looking to, you know, bring a lot of cancer patients and survivors together.
Following innovative technology in Chicago at ChicagoInno.com. Jim Dahlke is the senior editor over there. Okay, Jim, let's talk again soon. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, John.
Business news continues now on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new funding round produces results for a Chicago digital health startup, and it'll be used to improve care for low-income communities on the south and west sides. Chicago Inno reports Clinify Health raised $3.1 million from a venture capital firm that invests primarily in startups led by women and people of color. Clinify works with clinics in underserved communities by helping them transition to a payment model for doctors and medical groups that reimburses them based on health outcomes, not just frequency of visits. The University of Chicago's Board of Trustees has contributed $105 million to bolster its student financial aid program in honor of longtime and outgoing President Robert J. Zimmer. It's the largest gift of its kind in school history. The money will ensure the long-term financial health of the Odyssey Scholarship Program, which provides loan-free assistance to undergraduate students. Zimmer, who started the program in 2007, will transition to chancellor in September, ending his 15-year tenure as U of C's president. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The Business of Food and Steve Alexander.
John, you've been out to Fulton Market recently?
I've been to Fulton Market recently. Was it a restaurant in that neighborhood about 2 weeks ago? Why?
Yeah, all sorts of things are popping up, buildings all over the place. There was the boom not that long ago when all of those new restaurants came in and all that, but it continues to boom out there. One of the more unusual structures you'll see is a colorful big steel box wrapped in a mural that makes you stop and stare and wonder what's going on here. It is an urban farm that the Scala sisters, Jacqueline and Mary Catherine, established with their new company, Freight to Plate.
Our farm is right at the corner of Carroll and Racine.
That's Jacqueline Scala.
This is Mary Catherine. We both became obsessed with what the technology could do and how her and I could come together to make that technology accessible for that community.
But this isn't like the usual urban farm where some vacant lots are cleared off and the community gardens are created.
It's a standard shipping container, which is 8 feet by 40 feet, about 9.5 feet tall. Our site didn't even have utility, didn't have an address. We had to establish all of that.
The Scala sisters found a company that retrofits old intermodal freight shipping containers into self-contained hydroponic farming systems. Boston-based Freight Farms says one 40-foot container is capable of growing thousands of crops at once, year-round, anywhere. And anywhere is what piqued the Scala's interest. They want to share what they've learned in Fulton Market with communities all over Chicago.
We would love to provide a nutrient-dense produce source to all communities, not just the food deserts of Chicago, but even real estate developments that have maybe Class A tenants.
And as they hope to place more containers across the city, they see an opportunity to blend food and art.
Our amazing artist partner, his name is Sick Fisher, created this masterpiece for us, and it's something that we took a lot of pride in as well. And we would love to see that repeated in other areas when we put more farms out there, that local artists within that community can kind of brand their farm.
Freight to Plate, owned by Jacqueline and Mary Catherine Scala, are right now in Fulton Market and maybe coming to a neighborhood near you. Not much volatility at the Chicago Board of Trade today. Wheat is down 2 cents. Beans are up about 4. Corn is down about a nickel right now. Today is National Rum Day. And no farmers, no rum. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Wintrust Business Lunch. Amy Guth joins us. Let's talk about Tesla and autopilot first. Amy, what are you reading?
Yeah, exactly. So essentially, their autopilot feature is a probe has been opened by auto safety regulators. This happened earlier today because of a series of crashes that involve emergency vehicles. Essentially, since early 2018, they've identified at least 11 crashes in which these Tesla models with the autopilot feature activated, they encountered first responder scenes and subsequently struck at least one of the vehicles. Essentially, imagine like a police officer pulling someone over to give them a ticket. Here's this auto-driving car. It registers the, you know, the flashing lights and crashes into it. Ambulances, things like that. So the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, they could take no action on this. They could demand a recall. They might just essentially put some bumpers on it saying maybe put some limits on how or when this autopilot feature can be operated, things like that. But of course, there was a reaction to Tesla from shareholders at the on that announcement, things like that. So of these crashes, there have been 17 injuries and one death as a result of them. So it'll be interesting to see how this proceeds and what that does with Tesla.
Yeah, I wonder what that number means. 17 sounds like a lot, but when you consider how many miles, how many people, how many, et cetera, maybe that's not terrible. I mean, people get in crashes all the time, right?
Yeah, well, of these of the 11 crashes that they were aware of, you know, those are pretty high odds that, you know, they've injured that many people in 11 crashes. So, you know, I think it's really just a matter of something they've really got to iron out. If this autopilot program, you know, it needs to understand all the cues in the road. And that's really the trick of it, of how to read street signs. What do they do with them? How do they understand a pedestrian or a crosswalk, something like that? If the autopilot, you know, if it is a case where they move towards flashing lights, that would certainly be a problem. So it'll be interesting to see how that proceeds and what the fix is, if anything.
Yeah, I don't mind driving that much. I don't like traffic, but I don't mind driving an automobile. I'm not willing to throw the switch on that yet. Talk to me about holiday season. We've kind of hinted at this a little bit. Are there going to be enough workers out there? And Aldi is actually ramping up now, aren't they?
Yeah, so Aldi is one of the first big companies to really start naming numbers of what their plans are for the holiday season. Target has started to talk about it a little bit, but Aldi came out earlier today and said they plan to hire 20,000 workers in the U.S. ahead of holiday season. They realize, you know, they produced some numbers about just how big a role the holiday season plays in their budget. Plays in their revenue. So they're looking to make that higher. They've also increased wages. So now store and warehouse workers alike will start at $15 to $19 an hour, depending on, you know, where they're working, what they're doing. But they're looking for cashiers, stockers, associates. You know, they're looking to fill 2,100 stores and 25 warehouses. So that's a big group of people, 20,000 hires right there.
Field of Dreams, not surprisingly, had a good weekend, didn't it?
Yeah, it sure did. I thought this was really interesting to watch, but also to kind of watch it play out on social media. A lot of people had some kind of warm, fuzzy feelings about this, especially here in Chicago, because the White Sox beat the Yankees 9-8. They kind of recreated this scene from Field of Dreams. They're in a cornfield, and the ratings for it were 5.9 million viewers. The last time that happened was the Yankees-Boston Red Sox game on October 1st of 2005, and that drew in the same number of viewers. So that's a lot of eyes were on that for sure.
Yeah. White Sox didn't win the series, but we were talking earlier.
Right.
If you were the White Sox and you said, okay, you win one of the three, but it's the game in Iowa, or you win two of the three, but you lose the game in Iowa, which would you pick? And I think winning the one was worth the price of losing the two.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And then just to catch me up real quick on Bezos as Blue Origin, what's going on here?
Yeah, the billionaire space battle continues. And so Jeff Bezos' company, Blue Origin, they have filed a complaint against NASA in federal court. They're alleging that NASA's process for evaluating proposals, they've called it unlawful and improper. Essentially, if you recall, just a few weeks ago, we were talking about how Jeff Bezos was trying to kind of get in on the lunar landing spot. And that contract went to SpaceX, run by Elon Musk, of course, also associated with Tesla there. But Blue Origin wanted a piece of that too, saying, we want this to be competitive. We should all have access to this lunar lander contract. And so now he is suing NASA in federal court.
I'm a little confused by that. It would seem to me like we'll have to pick this up on another day. That would just go to, you bid on it, you do or don't get the contract, but another day. Okay, nice to talk to you, Amy.
Thanks so much.
That's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch.